Good morning, and welcome back to your morning conversation here on KXCV Karen W. I'm Jeremy Warner. Joining me this morning is Interim President of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. Clarence Green.
Yeah, I think the first question I have is just kind of a general overview of where you come from. I feel like you've been a part of the community for so long. I think a lot of people just are like, yeah, he's always been here, but I don't know that much about, you know, his background. Okay. So, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, where you're from and, you know, what kind of led you to Maryville.
Perfect. Clarence Green from East St. Louis, Illinois. I came here in 1991 to play football and to get an education. I have been here ever since then, left here for a brief stint to go back and work, and then came back here to work in the community as a Maryville public safety officer. Also worked at a private prison in Torquay, Missouri. Then came out to the university and have worked here for close to 26 years, serving in the police role, the most recent role, Vice President of Culture and University Police Chief. I served as the Interim Diversity and Equity Inclusion Vice President, the Interim Vice President of Human Resources. So a multitude of roles over a long period of time. I have four children. All of my children have went to school at Northwest. Two of them have graduated. One of them is still in the hopper. He's currently plays football here and majors in chemistry. Been married for close to 30 years. My wife is Shelley Green. She's been an educator within the community, private school at St. Gregory's, multiple public schools within the district. Now she teaches science at the middle school, sixth grade level. She's better known as Miss Green, the science queen. She really loves science, and everything is science in our house.
So that was a lot of information I've been digesting, but I kind of...
And to go along with that is I live out in the country now. I live in a, you know, on a farm. An 80-acre farm is where we live, where our house is at. And I've had beagles, and I've used the beagles to chase rabbits mostly, and I like the sound of dogs chasing things.
I was say, they probably like that, considering that a lot of them end up in the suburbs where they can't chase anything.
Oh, well, yes, and I'm out of dogs right now, so I don't have any anymore.
Well, you have to replenish them.
You're right.
So the thing I'm curious about, you know, I feel I don't want to take anything away from Bearcat Rewind, which people can listen to now, where you discuss your time with the Northwest football team.
Yes.
But I guess for, you know, on the flip side, you know, what was it during those years in Maryville at Northwest, you know, in the trenches of the football field and everything, what was it that kind of stuck out about law enforcement in your head that, you know, attracted you to it?
Well, I would say law enforcement was in my head before I came to school here. That was something I was pretty much content on being a part of. And that was largely because some influences in my life. Boone Anderson was the police chief within my community. And so I had a relationship with him through my father. My father and his father owned a mechanic business together. And their both named were Clarence. So it was Clarence and Clarence Mechanic Shop. And so that really influenced me from a very young age that I knew I wanted to do something around law enforcement as a career. And so when I came to school here, it just further accelerated that for me. I had a great professors such as Dr. Falcone, who worked with me a lot from a history perspective. I had a great academic advisor. At that time, it was Dr. Leslie Galbraith. She's still influential in my life to this day. Really helped me get on the right track academically and stayed on me to make sure I stayed on that track as well. I had a great professor in the sociology department, Dr. Roger Neustadter, who I'm still in contact with today. We hang out about twice a month. We'll have lunch together in Kansas City. And he really influenced me to think differently, to read more, to listen to different things, to really embrace going to speakers and getting outside of my comfort level. And I've enjoyed that since he introduced me to those different concepts.
And so from your perspective, how much has policing changed over the decades?
Oh, dramatically. You know, when I first became a police officer, things were so different. You didn't, you could serve as a police officer prior to even being trained for 1 year, you know. So policing has changed dramatically, moving from 120 hours to even be a credit to be a police officer to now it takes over, you know, 400 to 600 hours to receive your licensure as a peace officer, police officer in the state of Missouri. So there's drastic change. You know, there were no body cameras. There was no report writing systems when I became a police officer. You handwrit reports, you know, so things have just really changed drastically.
It sounds like you are attracted to things where you have to not only roll with the punches, but be able to, I guess, kind of be able to not punch back. That almost sounds like violent, but, you know, being able to not only react, but react before the reaction. Like, it's...
Yeah, I think what you're describing to me is dealing with a lot of ambiguity.
Yes.
It's something that I believe every police officer has to get comfortable with, you know, pretty quickly, because that's the work that we work within with working with the public. We never know how a situation will go or a day will go. You have to be very intentional about everything that you're doing, you're saying, all of your actions, and that you're documenting those as well. And at the root of policing, I believe it has helped me understand how to build trust. It's helped me understand really what kindness means. It's helped me see folks perhaps at some of their lowest levels in life, but also at some of their biggest joys as well. And to know that I can interact with those folks and I can help them have a successful outcome of what their day is going to look like the rest of that day, and perhaps what the rest of their life's going to look like, is important to me and important to all of those that I work with as well.
One of the questions I had, and this is something where it's not something that has necessarily ever been true in my lifetime, or at least since I've seen it, it might be. But, you know, there is this kind of, you know, dividing line between law enforcement and being black in America. Mm-hmm. And you've appeared to be firmly standing on that line, saying there shouldn't be a line, based on things that I've seen you say and, you know, talking about policing.
Yes.
What would you say was the reaction like when you first started taking a law enforcement role in this area?
Well, I think just for my family, you know, growing up in a metropolitan area, there's definitely a divide between policing and the black community. And being in a college environment, you can experience that as well. But I think that the two-ness of them both, you know, thinking about W.E. Du Bois and two-ness, and I believe they can coexist together. And I think I'm a testament of that, as well as several other officers that I work with within university police or in other jurisdictions. I believe we're all a testament of that. I think we have to work at building trust, building relationships with all portions of our community, specifically those communities who don't feel represented by policing, that we have to perhaps work harder at to build those relationships. And I think it starts with us just being us. And I've always just been Clarence, and that has worked out for me. And those that we have around us within our police department, we ask them to be their authentic selves as well, and that has always worked in the environments that I've been in. But that two-ness does exist. I don't believe we had a lot of issues within the Maryville community, but I think we have to work hard to mesh that divide and to reduce that gap as much as possible. And I think we've had some successes in that with just myself, as well as those I work with, being their authentic selves. And I believe that's going to be successful for most policing agencies or most folks who are dealing with trust issues within their organizations.
And so, and maybe you, I don't know if you've like had enough time in either to kind of fully comprehend it, but I'm curious, would you say that being a law enforcement leader as a black man in rural Missouri is easier or harder as opposed to suburban Missouri, where you're from?
Well, I think I don't know. I've never comprehended. I've never really thought about how difficult it would be in some areas and not others. I think just being a law enforcement officer has its challenges no matter where you're at. And I think I've had my challenges serving in this community, but also I've had a lot of opportunities. And I think it starts with just what I talked about a little bit earlier, just being your authentic self. And I've had great success, and we've had great success as a department with just being that, to encourage folks to come together, to have conversations, listening to what folks are saying, understanding what they're saying, and so making sure that we repeating back what we're hearing so that we make sure we understand, and then really aligning our work to what's being said. But because truly we are representative of the public, you know, we are the public and the public is us, and then acting on what's being told to us as well. And then, you know, it's going to take constant follow-up, constant communication, constant actions. And I think that's just the role of any public servant who is trying to go about building trust and trying to get the work done that the people need to get done and want to see done.
I guess the questioning comes from, you know, my life and kind of my experiences, because I grew up in Kansas City where there's still a lot of arguments over whether or not the police are actual representation of the communities that they're policing.
Yes.
And I still remember just it not being even really a thought when coming to Maryville as a student way back in 2006 and just, you know, we have an African-American police chief on campus, and it just wasn't this thing in my mind. I was like, well, that's weird. I just kind of thought, oh, okay. You know, it just went about my day. Wow. And so I'm curious, at the time you assumed that role, was there any kind of pressure? Do you feel like the community was ready for that kind of step forward?
I don't recall pressure. But because pressure to me means something different. You know, when I think about pressure, I think about someone who can't get a meal that evening. You know, just the mental pressures of being black in a predominantly white environment has never put a lot of pressure on me, because it's an opportunity for me to really help and bridge a gap so that we can recruit and more folks here to this environment. And this environment also is where I graduated from school, and I had a lot of success here. And so I know Northwest and Maryville community and Nottoway County is a special place that has something to offer everyone. And so what we did as a police department at that time was to ensure that we were representative of those that we serve. And that's something that's a pride point for us that we really work hard to maintain. Now, our representation is not exactly of the institution. We probably exceed what the institution does, or really a lot of industries does around, you know, race, ethnicity, international status for our employees. I think we have in the police department, it's over 20% or 30% black. It's over probably 15-20% Hispanic, and 40% of our students are made up of different races, ethnicities, and international students. And we have 52 student employees working over there. And so those are things that are pride point for us, because we want to make sure that we're serving and that we have those folks working with us so that we're listening, as well as it gives us a lot more creative ideas, I believe, to deploy across our campus, because we have all people making up so many different experiences that are assisting us.
And my thought process behind all that was to kind of gauge, because I feel like the elephant in the room is that you're going to be Northwest's first black president. Is there any pressure or any kind of, because I mean, you said pressure is, you know, you gauge that differently. Is there anything like stepping into the role that you feel is kind of being placed upon you when it comes to being the first?
Yeah, I think it takes fearlessness to be first. But also, I want to caution us when we think about diversity that we truly think about inclusion. I think that's what's neat. You know, Dr. Justin Mallett brought us an inclusive excellence plan. And that's really changed my mindset around the whole argument of diversity, because that's just a number. But we want that inclusion, because we want those voices to be able to be in spaces where they could speak their truth, speak for their experiences, because it's going to give us a richer outcome or a plan once it's able to be deployed, because we're going to have multitude of people helping us with it? And so are there pressures or are there different expectations put about around me being the first black president of Northwest Missouri State University? I think there's some expectations around diversity, sense of belonging, and perhaps those expectations might not even be fair, but I also welcome them because, you know, throughout my life, there's always been expectations that perhaps been put upon me or expected of me that may not always have been fair. But I would like to think that I've always rose to the occasion and worked with a team to help build those out and have some success and have had some success at accomplishing those goals or expectations that have put upon me or a team that I'm charged with working with.
So with this being an interim role, how much planning are you putting into the position? Because there is this kind of mysteriousness over, all right, does interim mean, you know, like a Mo West situation where you do a good enough job and they're just like, you know what, our best candidate we have is right here, you know, we do know what the Board of Regents are doing with the selection process and kind of have like a very general draft, but we still have, you know, no idea when the end game of selecting a president will be.
Yes.
So how much does that kind of just, I don't know, affect your plans for Northwest going forward?
Well, here in about 30 days, we're going to release. I've been working with our Northwest leadership team and a few others to build out some focal points for this academic year. And we're going to release what those are. And I'm truly excited about them. Anything that I do, it really talks to my personality. I'm all in for. And so I can't do anything half pitched, you know, or three quarters. It's going to be all of Clarence or probably none, but I don't know what none is because anything that I accept, any challenge, any opportunity, I'm going to be all in. And I'm all in on this challenge. I don't have interest of seeking this role full time. And so I know that there's going to become an end date. That's why we're working on goals really for this academic year and some things that's really core to this institution that will be able to live on no matter what the lead, who our new leader is moving forward. And one of those things, I'll just give you a pre-glimpse, it's going to be around building trust. And I think that's something that I have a history of doing from a policing side with the community. And that's something I hope that's going to aid the team as we move forward, because I think that's essential. That's something that we've kind of have some disagreements around right now and some folks who perhaps do not have trust. And that's not only within the actions that's recently occurred, but also if you think about our employee engagement survey, we have some issues there that we need to work out as far as building trust within our community.
And so how did the interim role come up for you to fill in once Jasinski was gone?
Well, the Board of Regents vetted the entire Northwest leadership team, and that's how they came about selecting an interim.
Was it something you were actively looking for, or were you just kind of like, this is my name, I'm going to throw it in the ring, you do what you want with it, I'm going to keep doing me?
Well, it was a little rocky for me at first because I was not interested at the first start of this, perhaps because I just didn't know if this would be the right role or the right time for me to help the institution, and could I help the institution in a support role, in the role that I currently served in as the vice president of culture? Would that be better to assist a leader? But talking about it with some key folks across the organization, as well as my family, it quickly came to me that I could help the institution. This is something that I should do. There's a responsibility that comes along with it that I'm really excited about taking on and just helping the organization continue to move forward. And so once I was settled in on my why, because I'm all about helping people, growing organizations, ensuring that folks have voice within their workplace, bringing a sense of inclusion for individuals who look like me and perhaps those even beyond. It became important to me that this is the right role and this is the right time. And so I indicated to the Board of Regents my interest. And at that point, you know, went to a vetting process and I was selected.
And you know, during that process, and then of course the announcement, I'm assuming you probably well before most public did, but you know, during that process, I guess I should add that, you know, over the years here, I've noticed, you know, the friendship and camaraderie that you and Jasinski had.
Oh, for sure.
Did that continue during the transition process of Jasinski going, you know what, I just felt like it was going to be you one day. We might as well dig in and see what we need to do before I hand the reins off to you.
Well, as you stated, Dr. Jasinski and I have always been close. The knowledge management transfer I thought was smooth and successful, just to keep them so that the organization will not falter at all. He did an excellent job of updating me on the information. And he always has. You know, being on the leadership team, we worked on some key projects throughout our time together here. And so some things were seamless, but also there was several things that I needed to be updated on, and he did a great job of doing that.
And so what's it going to be like in this role? Because you've handed off your other, you know, positions to other people in interim positions. But because of the unknown ahead, how much are you going to be able to, you know, in your life balance the interim role as president as well as these are jobs I might have to go back to? I need to make sure that, you know, I'm keeping track of those as well. Or is that just something that's a part of being a president, of having to know everything going on campus?
Well, fortunately, I've had a few experiences of doing that, serving as that vice president of diversity, equity, inclusion, serving as the interim vice president of human resources allowed me to step away and move right back. And so I've developed a little rhythm of how to stay updated on key things that impact all of those areas. And those areas will still report in essentially to me at some point. And so I'll be getting monthly briefings about things that are going on that will keep me plugged in.
Okay, so you won't have too many issues then kind of keeping track of previous roles?
I should not. I don't anticipate okay. that. And perhaps the greatest thing that I have going for me is I've done this a few other times within this organization. And so having those past experiences should aid me moving forward. And knowing that those organizations essentially are going to report in through me through either a vice president or them directly. And so I'll continue to have meetings and such, like the human our assistant vice president of human resources will still report directly to me. And so there shouldn't be a gap really in what's going on there. So when I step back in as the vice president of culture and university police chief, I should pick right back up. Well, Dr. Egon Heidendahl is going to lead our culture division. We'll still meet, and UPD will report in through him. And I'm sure there'll be touch points where he'll be feeding me information that's going to help me make a decision or help me help that unit out. And so I shouldn't be too far off the mark when I return.
So the one thing that kind of piqued my interest, you know, you have had so many positions and at Maryville. Is it possible that, you know, as your time as president, you kind of learn other ways that you can benefit Northwest that maybe you hadn't thought of before when you start examining kind of the whole piece of the whole pie and then start having to examine individual pieces and see them? You think seeing them in a different light is going to open you up to the possibility of doing something different in the future if, you know, the interim basis kind of lapses back to being the chief and head of diversity? It's a very confusing question, I know.
Basically, it's a good one. Like, I think what you're saying is all of this new knowledge I'm going to gain, will it help me be either a better police chief, or will it help me think about, boy, I have something else I can offer an organization?
You took the word vomit out of my mouth. Yes.
Well, I think both are equally true. For sure, anytime you get an experience, especially something like this, I think it's going to aid me dramatically. You know, I always believe, you know, you don't lose, you just learn. And with this situation and the opportunity and responsibility that I now have, boy, it's going to be a lot of learning that I'm going to have, and it's going to aid me be a better police chief. And if I have aspirations to do something different in the future, I don't see how it will hurt me at all. You know, it's only going to aid me. It's going to help me think different about situations situations and problems and challenges that we have. And also it's going to expand my knowledge just of the organization. Some of this, you know, serving on the leadership team for the last 3 years, I have a good knowledge and working with finance, our CFO, Stacy Carrick, we have worked closely the last 3 years, you know, so I have a good understanding of some functions. The academic functions, working with our provost more, are really intriguing, and learning a lot about those is just really helpful also.
So, you know, part of being able to see everything, when you begin to look at like everything with Northwest now and the future and in the past, what are some of the weaknesses that you kind of want to turn into opportunities in this position that you have either seen for years or just now seeing going, wait, why is this here?
But just now seeing is around the trust. I think our culture, I think we're on the improvement right now, but that's where we have probably the biggest gap at, to me right now, is building back that trust within our community, within our alums, within our students of the organization, I think is paramount. And everything we do, we're going to have to really work on that trust element. And that's going to take a lot of communication. It's going to take a lot of understanding. It's going to take a lot of explaining why we do things the way we do. And it's going to take some, hey, we were wrong, we now going to change this, and it's going to take, you know, communication. And I think we're going to need to gather more people around the table to help in decisions as well.
Do you think it's more a lack of transparency or just people simply not liking the decisions?
Well, I don't know if it's a lack of transparency, or I think both of those could be, they have some elements of truth in both. Transparency is always a hard word for me, because we'll never be able to lay out everything about every situation, because there are laws, and then we just want to be respectful to others and not share some things. But I think we can always explain why. And so that's why some of that's on us, that we need to explain why better. We perhaps need to listen more. We need to make sure we're understanding what folks are saying, so making sure there's clarifications there. And then we need to be reaching back out. Sometimes it is just folks are not happy with the decision that's made. But I think if we can explain the why, we can lessen those folks who are not just happy with the decision.
And so, yeah. You've probably dealt with this many, many times before in your previous role as police chief, sometimes being the face, the head of an organization or whatever. A lot of the problems are kind of put on your shoulders when, you know, A, it's not your fault, maybe in the random instance we'll say this is maybe the D reason, it is your fault. But, you know, most of the times it isn't. You know, what are you going to take away from your time as police chief in handling those situations where there's a crisis or incident that isn't your fault, but all the questions and blame is being pointed at you? How will you be, you know, kind of shouldering that and handling that as president now in a role where, you know, the, I don't want to say the complaints are the same, but the finger pointing is still at the head of the organization as opposed to sometimes the actual problem?
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, our athletic director, Andy Peterson, has shared a book with me a few years ago. I think one of the sports teams read the book. It's around extreme ownership. And so it's just really owning what the issue is, and again, communicating our why of why we did some, what was our purpose, and communicating why what we did didn't work or why we believe it did. And then also doing a total after-action review of each incident so that we can understand what were our strengths, what were our opportunities, and then how do we course correct for the future. And also sharing that information out with folks so that they'll know why we did what we did, what's the course correction moving forward, and having that ownership of just the issues that come about.
And I don't want to just harp on negative things, because there's always a lot of positive things going on around here. What are some of the things that, now that you're in a presidential role, you want to be like, you know what, we've done a really good job at this. I want to let everybody know, and I also want to keep building on it. What are some of the, you know, positives that you've seen over the years that you want to build upon?
I think our student interactions, what we're doing around engaging our students or a student success center, I think are very positive. Having success coaches that meet with students, that take in all of our freshman students, I think that is very important and positive. I think the customer service that is deployed by our faculty staff across our campus is excellent. I think we treat people very well and from a customer service lens. I think those things really highlight our work. I think what we're doing in our engagement, our student engagement, whether it be from SAC in the activities and events that they're planning to ensure students are involved, student organizations, them making sure that we have the right student organizations, and we have enough of them that represent, you know, the diversity that we have across our campus. Also, they work very hard, you know, to make sure that those events are inclusive and that they have, you know, a great representation that's serving in those roles. I think those things are huge successes for us. That we need to talk about and do more. I think a lot of our speaker series that we have across campus, especially those that are brought in by Dr. Mallett and his area of D&I, you know, I think those things are important as well as they're really helpful for our organization and they're very positive for our students, faculty, and staff. I think we have tremendous faculty who really work hard to ensure that students are engaged, that they're getting a profession-based learning experience. All of those things are important for us, and they're going to help us continue to grow and keep our momentum going.
And do you feel like you're kind of in a prime position for that? Because it sounds like, and I may be mischaracterizing this, but it sounds like a lot of the problems slash opportunities, the common thread is communication. And I feel like this is my personal belief that maybe you're in a prime position to do that because, if I remember correctly, you were one of the first ones to kind of put a face to, you know, campus police. And you start a lot of social media engagement with students and all of that. Do you feel like there's a lot more room for communication, whether it be social media, whether it be, you know, website, or whether it just be, you know, telling people in person?
I think there's a lot of room for communication. And I think that's unfair to say that we, you know, that Clarence didn't do anything really with social media. We had a couple of great students that we hired, and we've had great students, you know, who really did all of the media and the communicating for UPD. So they really transformed us. And I would have to credit a lot of that also to Brandon Stanley, you know, who really convinced us or really convinced me that we should hire people who are different than traditional police folks, you know, who are really dreamers and, you know, their thoughts are a little bit more scattered, not as, you know, formalized as what we're used to dealing with in a police setting. And they really pushed us to do things differently. I think we need to also think about that across the organization of how we're going to communicate differently. One way in which we're going to try to do that, and we're going to do that this year, is more in-person communication, being more visible at key meetings where we have like our government associations, like our Faculty Senate, our Staff Council, our Student Senate, RHA, being there, having a physical presence, as well as having an opportunity to talk about what are those focal points that we're trying to accomplish this year, and how do we need you to assist in that. And I think that's going to help with that transparency question. It's going to help with understanding the why, and it should help with folks just knowing what's going on and having voice.
Is the in-person decision kind of was that something that was kind of coming out of the pandemic? Is that just kind of, you know, trying to get back to what it was, or was there kind of a noticeable change when we began communicating not face-to-face, when we began communicating just messenger or email?
I think for me, it's always been the preferred method, which it's been – I've been fortunate because I prefer the in-person method. But also, I think just the you know, the science around trust would say if you could meet with folks, you know, and look them in the eye and just talk directly and answer questions directly, you're going to have more success.
Okay. You know, I guess one of the things I guess I would be remiss if I didn't ask this. What has been the working relationship been like with the Board of Regents? Because I guess that's the other elephant in the room of, you know, why there's been a lack of trust. So I guess I'll just ask, you know, what's it been like working with the Board of Regents?
For me, it's been excellent. You know, I've always had a great working relationship with the Board of Regents, and that has continued. I think, you know, when we talk about fearlessness and brave and, you know, asking, you know, Clarence, how does it feel to be the first black president? You know, I think the question should be asked of them. How does it feel to really appoint the first black president? I think that takes, you know, a level of courageousness that's out there also. They've been very open, honest with me, direct. Everything that they have been before in the past, that they're still that with me right now. And I look for that just to carry on. I think there's just certain things that perhaps couldn't be shared or shouldn't have been shared that they've elected not to talk about. And I applaud them for that because they have noble reasons for not putting those things out there. And so it just created this uneasiness and this lack of trust across our organization. And I'm excited about the opportunity to help repair that because I believe that's something that I can do well and I like doing. And I feel very good that we will repair that.
And so would you say communication is the biggest problem moving forward under your tenure, or is there maybe something else that
It's not only, you know, we have to, you know, most things are judged by your actions. You could say a lot of things, but what are you acting on? Dr. Hubbard, our former president, has a quote at the end of his email line that says, after all is said and done, more is said than done. And so to me, what that really challenges us to do is, what are those actions? We have to get more done than said. And so not only is communicating, but also doing those things that you're saying you're going to do. Within student affairs, they had this training on how to be a successful leader. And one of the little words that was in there that sticks with my head is doing what you say you will do. And that's what that quote means also. So we're going to have to do what we say we do and not only just communicate, but do those actions. And I think that's going to put us in the right direction and position for our organization.
Okay. You know, as we kind of, at least for my questions as I draw to an end, I guess the kind of one big question I have is, you know, are you interested in the role as president permanently?
I'm not interested in the roles permanently. I think what's the task that's put before me right now around trust, enrollment, bringing forward some plans around athletic plans, enrollment plans, athletic plans, P3 plans, speaks to me for right now and what I'm trying to accomplish. And I think that's where I'm best served is to do this role in the interim, set the organization up and help it transition for a new leader, and then step to the side and help support that new leader as we move into and really as we set a new vision for the entire institution.
Well, not to continue prying, but is it possible you could change your mind a few months into the role?
Well, I based off my past experience, I've had experience, you know, as the vice president of human resources, the vice president of diversity and inclusion, and I was set on going into those to do a task that was assigned to me to do that work and to step back, and that's the same way I've approached this role. And so that's a non-answer, I guess.
Okay. No, I.
But I don't believe so.
No. Okay. So I guess the logical follow-up would be, what would you want to see in a future Northwest president? Because I feel like, you know, serving in the role and being around, I feel like most people would be like, you know, what do you want to see? Because, you know, you've been in the job for, you know, however long it'll be by the time, you know, everything wraps up. So you'll have a very good idea of what you want to see in a leader for Northwest, even if it is yourself. I'll keep throwing that out there. But
I want to see an honest, I think the first trait is high integrity. I also want to see a visionary that has a good pulse of what the academic, institutional lens should look like moving forward. I want to see a person who is a strong communicator, who could make decisions, who has purposeful about their actions, purposeful about their interactions and communication. I think if they could have that type of skill set, you know, high emotional intelligence, high empathy, I think we're going to get that. We're going to get someone who is special, who is willing to come into our community, our institution, and help us really become more than what we are. I really look forward to that person saying, you know, dream with me. You know, I think about our vice president of information technology, Brendan Lehman. He always say, what can we be? I think that's a great question. What can we be? What can Northwest be? And so that's going to help us get there.
Okay. And so the final question I have is, what work needs to be done from now until students coming back? We have at least, I haven't written it down, so I'm guessing, but we have a little over a month until the return of students.
Yes, sir.
What needs to get done before that happens?
I think we just have some prep work to get our facilities, you know, in line for students. I think our faculty, when they return, we'll have an opening meeting. I think they'll be already charged and reinvigorated to start the year. I think the things that we need to do is make sure that we're prepared to respond to our employee engagement survey for our people, that we have some of those answers lined up and ready to go. I believe we need to have focal points of what it's going to be, our direction for this year and our path forward. And I think we'll be in good shape.
All right. Well, those are all the questions I have. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
You've covered it. Excellent.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
That was Interim President of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. Clarence Green. I'm Jeremy Warner, and this has been your morning conversation right here on KXCV KRNW.